It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
And welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler at Home Edition. We are joined today by the chairman of the Orange County Commissioners, Penny Rich, great friend of the show. Penny, how are you?
Well, we're doing okay, still at home, just like you.
Yeah.
But we're hanging in there. Yeah. It's pretty interesting,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, it kind of is and totally isn't, right? I mean, the concept of something being interesting, the novelty has worn off, I think.
That's for sure. Yeah. Yeah. The novelty has definitely worn off. And there are long segments of time where I have to admit that I am a little bit bored. Like I would like
more
to do. Yeah. No, it's interesting because we're, as you know, same with most people, all of our meetings have gone to these, you know, online meetings. And you and I were just talking a little bit before how exhausting some of them are because we're watching everybody, we're watching ourselves.
Right.
And so, you know, you need to take a little break in between them or, you know, break in between them. And then there's like long periods of time where there's, you know, you don't have that and there's nothing to do. And I'm like, oh my God, what should I do? Should I clean the kitchen again? Let's see. I don't know. Let me water the plants.
Again.
Poor plants. They've gotten so much water over the past 3 months. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and by the way, I mean, if they were outside too, they would have drowned by now. I've got a tomato plant outside that's saying, really, stop it.
Stop.
No more rain.
Stop
no more
raining.
Rain.
Yeah. And the mosquitoes are coming out now. I don't know if
you've
gotten bitten yet. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're man-eating mosquitoes. I'm thinking that, you know, some of them should be registered as aircraft. They're quite substantial and
they
hungry.
Are. Yeah,
I
thought they would give us a break because, you know, we've had COVID, we've had, you know, the George Floyd incidents, we have the sand coming in from the Sahara or wherever that sand is coming in, earthquake in Mexico.
I don't understand.
Can you explain that to me? It's like crossing the Atlantic and it's heading our way. I'm not quite sure I understand that.
I cannot explain that. I don't understand how particles could be in the air for such a length of time as that. I'm skeptical it's a true story, but I think it kind of is.
Yeah.
You know, you did not mention murder hornets.
The hornets.
What is this?
I did not see
like
hornets.
A bee that's the size of a softball or something?
Yeah, and they go and actually kill the bees, right? They go, and but the bees have gotten smart. They figured out how to cook them once they get into the hive. So we're good there. But then we also have the, 7-year cicada? That's going to be
17.
Yeah. Yes. 17. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They'll be coming around soon. That should be an interesting show. Yeah.
That's always, you know, it really is interesting to see what happens in nature when you have these kind of big changes to and reductions in the ways the human beings damage the environment. And when that gets cut back, you suddenly have clear skies in every city in the world.
Right.
You have whatever these things are that mean you have a reduction in car accidents. You have, reductions in deaths from car accidents. These are good things, but it's fascinating to see what happens in nature. I saw a wonderful speaker, a Duke professor, came to an event in Orange County some years ago, and I went to cover it. We ended up not doing the story, but I was continued to be fascinated with what he talked about because he was talking at the Maple View facility in that beautiful community room they have, the effect of climate change. And something he said that really stuck with me was when we talk about climate change, sometimes people who want to dismiss this describe it as human beings saving this, that, and the other form of life, some obscure, bug or varmint or whatever that's endangered. And he says, that's exactly wrong. He says, you know, continues on its path. What will happen is, in a foreseeable future, that it is human life that will not be sustained on Earth. We're not saving Earth. We're only saving people, because what will happen is if human life were extinguished because we created the conditions that meant that we couldn't survive, Earth will be fine. He says, you know, human beings are gone, and in about 50 years, the Earth will return to how it was before humans were here.
Right.
So Earth, we're not saving Earth. We're just saving us. And yeah. I thought, you know what, in the whole branding, if you will, of climate change, that's a better argument. I think that's a much yeah. better argument, more effective.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is interesting if you look around the world and pictures, you know, not only in the United States, but, you know, animals that have taken back the streets again because no one is
yes.
driving and no one's out. I mean, lions walking down the streets and, you know, even
God,
here.
Can you imagine?
I can, yeah. But I think even here, you know, I've seen a whole lot more deer because they're not getting hit this season, right? So a
right.
lot more babies are running around Carrboro. Good or bad, I'm not sure.
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah, you know,
not so good if you're growing vegetables outside. But yeah, we have them too.
Yeah,
we have right? like so, we have like a whole cluster of deer that are always on our street, and it does seem at times like it just in our area that they're like, oh, no more cars. Okay, well,
we can hang out.
They're okay with yeah.
Yeah, have a fox. Have you seen any red-tail fox?
I have not seen that
oh,
yet.
Right here in the wilds of Carrboro. Yeah, we've seen that too. And I live downtown
wow.
Carrboro.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So walking on I shouldn't say we were walking on the railroad tracks. Scurrying into
the
woods.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, you got to take pictures.
You know, I just didn't get the phone out of the pocket quick enough. I mean, it's always coming
just,
and like, scoot it off.
Yeah, yeah, you're just like, oh, okay, now there's going to be fox. Oh, well.
Yeah.
And you know, and reactively, you said, oh, Fox, I'm changing the channel.
Because you know me.
Yeah. Well, you know,
as one
does,
yeah,
you change the channel. So, Absolutely. So let's start with the most immediate local issues, which is, we had moved to the county, correct me where I'm wrong here, where the county was requiring face masks. I think that's fairly recent.
Right.
And now you've told me that the governor is saying that's it. It's mandatory statewide.
It was, yeah. And so if you recall, Durham went first a long time ago. Durham required face masks.
That's right.
So they were first. And then Buncombe County and Asheville
right.
came up second.
Of all places, right?
Well, you know, I think the mountains are really concerned about visitors right now. And so Asheville wanted to put that in place before the summer visitors started
right,
coming.
Right, right, right.
And then Orange County did it. So we had three places that had it. And as soon as that happened, we saw Greensboro go. We saw Winston-Salem go. We saw Charlotte go, you know, one after another. And it's really interesting. I even had calls from folks outside of the state, as far up as Massachusetts, asking us if they could take the ordinance that we wrote for face coverings and use it. And I'm like, yeah, you don't have to ask
oh,
me.
Oh, fantastic.
That.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So I had someone from Connecticut call me, I had someone from Massachusetts call, and someone from Maryland. And so it was out there that Orange County, North Carolina was now requiring face masks. But you're absolutely right. At 3 o'clock, the governor, I believe, now I was just, because we're taping at the same time, I believe what he is saying is that it's going to be required everywhere in North Carolina now. If his rule is stricter than the rules that you have in your county, his rule
right.
counts.
Right.
And so that's going to happen. And then they're not going to go to the phase three like we thought they were going to until July 17th now. And this is important because this covers, you know, bars and gyms and places where people
right.
really are close together. And this is all
yeah.
precipitated because of the numbers, Gene. The numbers are not going in the right direction.
Well, right. And, you know, it's astonishing to me that any leader of any political stripe would be willing to go against what the obvious science is, which is if the numbers are growing, you have to slow down.
Right.
But why is that complicated? I can't.
I know, because you and I don't think like that, but it's politicized, right? I mean, if you
right.
put on a mask, then you're going against, you know, the Donald
freedom.
Trump's of the world, right?
Yeah,
and freedom.
Freedom.
But, you know, it's interesting, the same people that are talking about, you know, women's rights are the same people that, you know, don't want to put a mask on. And it's just, it's interesting. They pick and choose where rights and where freedom belongs. But you should not be against keeping people alive. I'm sorry, you should not be doing that.
Yeah,
it's just not that hard.
Yeah, it's not. It's not that hard at all. Well, you know, speaking of what isn't hard, it isn't hard to talk to Penny Rich, and we're going to do a lot more of it. But we're going to take a quick break, and you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back with Penny Rich. And, you know, so we're not going to go to phase three until mid-July, you know, if we do it in mid-July.
Right.
And, you know, if I were betting my lunch money, I'd say, you know, in mid-July, they're going to pick another date that's out in the further out. But it's a good idea, you know, to take it a month or so at a time and then see what happens. I mean, you know, what's going to happen in Oklahoma and in Phoenix, Arizona over the next 2 weeks is going to be very interesting. Probably more Phoenix than even, you know, it couldn't get the crowd that they were hoping for in Oklahoma. But
I didn't pay attention. Was there a big crowd last night? Were you paying attention to that?
Well, what there was is that, first of all, they were at least clever enough to be in a smaller venue.
Okay.
So they were, so they were in a church, so they at least had every seat filled. And then the downside is that they had every seat filled.
Yeah.
But also, while people were waiting in line outside, I think that their number was, it was a mega church in Phoenix. I'd be surprised if there were 2,000 seats. Mm-hmm. But outside, there were people waiting in line outside to come in. And, you know, it's Phoenix. And it's June. So right. It's 109, give or take. And they have these giant misting machines, which is basically just a fan that then aerates, you know, that then just, you know, distributes moisture into the air across the crowd. These are very large fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you were an epidemiologist trying to design a way to distribute a virus,
this would
across
be it.
A crowd of people, this would be it.
This would be it. Yeah.
These are airborne droplets in large quantities across many, many people. Probably one of the most idiotic displays you can think of if you're trying to prevent people from getting sick.
Right.
But that happened, and then they came inside, and then you had the very feature that Trump would want, which is people yelling and screaming and therefore projecting droplets, which people do. I don't think maybe there's somebody left in the world who doesn't know that whenever you speak, you spray a certain amount of right. moisture with the air that you're breathing. It's not like you're spitting on everybody all the time. Only
you can't control
that.
But you can't control that's part of right. That's part of what we do.
It's part of human speech.
Goodness.
That's the reason why there was an outbreak in this church that had held services a month or two ago, and, you know, way over half of the people in the church got sick, and the reason was they were singing.
Yeah.
And when you have a large group of people singing, then the way that you're moving the air and moisture in the air, you're distributing a highly contagious, aggressive virus. So that's why, you know, the churches are going to, I would think, would be one of the last organizations where, unless you can do the distancing inside, and even if you can, everybody needs to wear a mask. Everybody.
Oh, yeah. I don't understand when the churches came back online why they didn't insist people wear a mask. I don't understand that. I mean, that came back a while ago, and people were just not wearing masks. And maybe it wasn't in style yet, or people didn't know about it yet, or, like, you know, they just didn't want to believe the science.
But so the event in Phoenix, the event in Oklahoma would have been of much greater concern had the place been filled. There's all the political side of why that's a bad thing for Trump, but at least from a public health standpoint, there were 6,200 people instead of 19,000 And that means that fewer people did not have to be as compacted in their physical environment as they would have been. So there's less concern about what happens from that event as a super spreader event. But the thing in Phoenix is just a perfect setup for a so-called super spreader event. Mm. And, you know, I think that in the coming 2 weeks, we're going to hear that a hell of a lot of people got sick from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we can add Kentucky to that also, right? Because of closing down all the voting places and, you know, folks had to stay online forever yesterday.
Right.
I don't know if it's such as much as Arizona, but you're putting people highly at risk for standing online right. for hours. You're talking to people. Right. You can't keep 6 feet away.
Yeah.
And then once you get into these places, right?
At least they allowed the absentee, the mail-in ballot this year, I think for the first time, and early voting. And so they said yesterday that the turnout just from the mail-in ballots broke the record for turnout before they did any in-person
voting.
So that's good. That's a good thing for November. And it's an especially good thing because it means that the mail-in ballot scenario is resolved legally in Kentucky, I think.
I knew it was for that. You know, so, you know, as we're speaking about that, we should remind people here in Orange County, my mom has done it, my boys have done it, you can do it right now. You can go to the Orange County website, go to the elections page, and get your absentee ballot form and fill it out and send it in. And, you know, you only need to send it in with a stamp. And when it comes back to you now, you don't need two witnesses. You only need one. There's no, you don't have to get it notarized or anything like that. But if you choose to go in person, you could still do that. You can't do both.
Right.
You could do one or the other. But I'm really encouraging folks to do this because, you know, we don't know what it's going to look like in November here. I mean,
we could go into our
second wave of this. And
in November, you're in flu season too.
Exactly.
At its beginning. But, for me, it's going to be an easy call. I'm just absolutely going to mail it in because I have no concern over, you know, whether or not I'm confident in the process of what happens to my ballot after I send it in.
And you should be. But, you know, as someone that just went through a recount and watched them actually open the absentee ballots, I was there while they did it. You should be confident that the Orange County Board of Elections is absolutely doing their job and they're doing it 100% right. There is no fraud going on there whatsoever.
Right.
So you can trust
and
the process.
They take process very, very seriously.
Very seriously. Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I mean one thing that's going to be true, I think, across the country is that we're not gonna have the instant gratification of election night. It's probably gonna be a day or two before anything is really locked down and certain. And I think everybody needs to kind of be prepared for that. And the reason why is that the president is going to be promoting the idea that if we don't know right away, then there's corruption. Then it's a sign of corruption. And it isn't. But we have to promote these facts and how it is that this will be handled in our community, which is what we have some control over. And I hope that elected officials across the country, boards of elections and otherwise, all of you, promote that heavily by the time early voting starts.
Right.
I think that ought to be the messaging for people to understand that it's very likely that it's going to be several days after the election and perhaps a week or more before we know the outcome and that this is expected. So that we can carefully count and validate, you know, ballots that are mailed. Because we haven't done it that way, that I remember, on a massive scale, ever.
No. Yeah, we haven't. And my sisters live on the West Coast. In Seattle, there is no in-person voting. You have to do it by mail.
Right.
That's right. It's just not there. And California, you know, you have your option, but more and more people in California are now voting by mail also.
And they usually, because, they often have these giant ballots too in California.
Yeah, crazy. With all kinds of stuff on it. Pages and pages.
Yeah.
Well, but you might as well sit at your dining room table and you know, do your research and relax and fill in your ballot. Make sure you get a witness before you send it back in, and it just do it. I mean, it's not that difficult. It's a little bit odd the first time you do it. Once you do it, you'll be fine.
Yeah. It's too bad you can't practice, right? Have a practice round. That would be great.
Yeah. It's a confidence builder. You're doing just fine.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Fill it out and put it in the mail.
Just fill it in. You know, take a picture of it if you want before you send it.
The ballot looks the same as the one that it does in person. I've watched both of my children do it, and I've been a witness to both of them before.
I like it.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
All right, Penny Rich. We're gonna take another quick break, and then we're going to be right back. We're talking to Penny Rich on the Weekend Water Cooler. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with Penny Rich, and I guess that the lesson for today is, yes, I'm probably going to go there. you know, one of the things that that I wanted to talk to you about is the phenomenon of racial demonstrations that we've seen. I'll just tell you a quick story. We were in Raleigh, I guess it wasn't yesterday, it was the day before yesterday, test driving a vehicle, and we were driving around, and we ended up driving through this neighborhood, not particularly familiar with it, in Raleigh, and it quickly became obvious to me that this is a really affluent neighborhood in Raleigh, really, really affluent. And as we started driving on the main drag that led to that neighborhood, I saw one house that was, I think it's facing onto Glenwood Avenue, it doesn't matter, but the side of the house, somebody painted on the side of their house, Black Lives Matter, in very large, bold print, easily visible from the street, which I thought was pretty cool. And so we turn there and start driving, and we end up in this neighborhood that's really a very affluent, you know, when there are iron gates in front of it, and you know, a big driveway, and you know, these are 3,000 and 3,500 square foot houses, and pricey money, and in many of these yards in front of these houses were yard signs that are like a real estate sign or a political sign that said Black Lives Matter.
Mm.
And I thought, yeah, that's interesting. I would never have expected to see that. And I think that, you know, you and I are of a vintage that we remember people marching in the streets for different things in the 60s and 70s. And yeah, you know, people marched and whatnot. But to me, the conversation that we're seeing is really penetrating past just the demonstration level and the mixture of people at demonstrations and the specifics of what they want. Mm-hmm. To me, is at a completely next level of anything that I've seen before. And of course, you know, I've been involved in counter demonstrations against the Klan in our county at the courthouse in Hillsboro and on Franklin Street in the late 80s and early 90s. And this is way up and past that.
Right. And it is the time is now, right? I mean, that's
right.
Exactly what I think you're saying. I think a lot of it is, you know, based on just the past history, but you know, George Floyd would just sort of turned it all around. But there's been events that were leading up to this, and this just, for some reason, as we know, because everybody could take a photograph now of what's going on, and you can see it live, you can see it happening, it just sort of changed the face of it. I also think, you know, again, I'm going to have to go back to the president, because he's been such a horrible racist leader, that it's everybody is getting sick and tired of it. and need to make that change. So us as white people have to look at ourselves and say, what can we do? How can we help? How can we make a difference? And I think in the past, even though, you know, you and I have been in these counter protests, and, you know, as a Jew, it's been really hard sometimes to watch the KKK march and stand there and, and see that Nazi flag come at you. So, you know, we know that it takes everybody to make a change. We have to unite, and it takes us all time to learn and process and help make that change. But it was coming. I mean, you cannot have someone that is constant, and he's doing it now. Again, it's not, he's going out and talking about the coronavirus and making racist remarks about that.
Right.
So people are tired of that. And so it all just came to this head, if you will. And you're right. And you know, you're seeing Black Lives Matters where you would not have thought that they would be a year ago, signs and posters and, you know, folks, you know, making Facebook statements and Twitter statements. But now we have to back it up. You know, it's one thing by saying it, but the action is more important. So
it's so interesting about that, you know, they would try to get Bernie Sanders, for example, to say Black Lives Matter. Would you know, Senator, would you agree that Black Lives Matter? And his response was an often standard response at that time, which is, oh, well, I think all lives matter. And, you know, and this sort of attempt to smooth it over, demonstrating that he didn't understand what was behind that expression.
Right.
And now, you know, for heaven's sake, if Mitt Romney's got his head wrapped around it, then I think we've cleared the stage for a lot of people are obviously understanding now that if you just added the word just as much as white lives, which is the point, it's about equality. It's not about we're special, we're better. It's about equality, that our lives matter just as much as yours. And, you know, I got that, you got that, but, you know, I think a lot of people didn't. And one of the things we were talking about before is that when we've done conversations like this on the radio, where there's been this sensitivity of, well, maybe we shouldn't get into that unless we have a guest who's Black, because two white people, I mean, I'll just tell you that Aaron and I have had this conversation. I don't know about doing this with us, just the two of us, nice white people, well-meaning white people, having this conversation. And, you know, a year ago, I probably would have agreed with that could ring as insensitive. But at this moment, how I feel about it, at least, I'll speak for myself, is that, yeah, we should have two white people talking about it. White people need to talk about this. And we need to... We need to find that place where we're free to express ourselves. I think you learn this in equity training as well. You need to have that space where you can first get the idea out, and then you can craft how it sounds if you want to make it sound better. You don't want to sound insensitive. But a lot of white people need to get together and talk about this so that people who are more uncomfortable can talk about it with people who are less uncomfortable. And so they can talk through it and they can understand this better.
And I think that's very, very important for, especially for white people to do, but do the training with white people and Black people in the room together. Because it's amazing how differently, or how, you know, how history has been taught us. And you know, not only from a school standpoint, but from a family standpoint. I've done racial equity training twice, and I've done the groundwater training. So I've gotten three attempts with three different groups of people.
Right.
And every time I come out of there, I'm just, you know, in awe with how much I learned. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's important. And that allows you as a white person to start talking a little bit more about, you know, what you have learned in these kinds of training, and that two white people can sit and talk about racial equity, and it's important for us to do that. It's not, to shy away from that conversation and just be silent is not helping. It does not help the cause at all. So, I mean, I'm happy to sit here and talk with you about it. And it's amazing to me that people have come together so quickly all around the country, all around the world.
It's amazing.
It is. It made me a little nervous that there were protesters so close to each other. But, in Chapel Hill and Hillsborough, at least, we saw most people wearing masks and being a little bit respectful of that 6 feet.
Right.
Still yelling and screaming. So we are encouraging everyone that's been to a protest, if you're not feeling good, to go get tested. So far we're crossing our fingers. That's not the reason why our numbers are going up. There are other reasons.
I think it's been about a week since the larger demonstrations in Chapel Hill, right?
That's right. And the health director was saying, 5 to 7 days after the protest, if you didn't feel good and symptoms, real symptoms that you need to, both of us are crossing our fingers. Yeah. I know you can't see us, I think the more importantly is what you said is that we need to continue talking about this and we need to have these conversations and don't shy away from the conversation because that's not going to help us. Again, we need to be united. We need to come out with strong voices. And we also need to listen as white people to find out how can we change and how could we, the greater good, that's what we're here for. It's to make changes that help everybody. But it is Black lives that matter. And that's what we're talking about right now. And that's what we're concerned about right now.
Right. Right. And I think, by the way, that the governor of Minnesota, I think quite emotionally a couple of weeks ago, he said something that just knocked me back hard. He just said, this might be our last chance to get this right. And I think he's right. We've stepped up and said, we're going to change this law. We're going to change this that way. But you know what? The big structural changes that are needed, we're not going to have but so many more chances to get this, to get it right, to really make a major structural change that's going to have long lasting effect. And we're talking with Penny Rich, and we're going to wrap it up in our next segment. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back with Penny Rich, and we're just talking about science. It's coming back. Yeah. It has a future. It has a future. So Well, thanks, science. So here's how I know that this is my atheist children. Always, if I say thank God, they go, well, thanks, science.
Yeah, I know, me too. I don't know why I say that, but yeah, exactly. Let's thank science. I like that much better.
You don't have to take a side in it. You can just say thank goodness. I'm good with that.
Goodness.
By the way, I have my grandson saying this regularly. He says, oh my goodness.
I love
it's so adorable to hear a two-year-old say, oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And now I can get him to say, my mother used to say, goodness gracious, Miss Agnes, because she had an aunt and a cousin named Agnes. This was just one of her expressions. And so I have him saying that too. It's the greatest thing ever. But anyway, all right. So here's how I know that we've turned a corner in a gigantic cultural shift. Well, two things. One I mentioned to you a minute ago, the other one I didn't. Drinking and driving when I was in high school was people were like, yeah, so what? That is not the case anymore. Culturally, this is just really unacceptable. It's a career ender. If you're a politician and you're caught doing this, if you're CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield, you're done. You're fired.
Right.
Right? So that cultural thing of drinking and driving, that changed. But I'm looking at the changes that we're going through and in the way that people are trying to talk about race relations and how white people are looking at this and changing and learning. And what I thought of is when my mother-in-law moved in with us in 1993 with emphysema, end-stage emphysema, her doctors were at Duke. And it used to be that I would take her for her medical appointments, and we would go over there with her and her oxygen tank and her extremely compromised respiratory system. And we would go into the building, the medical buildings, but first we would have to go through an absolute fog of cigarette smoke at each entrance, because at that point, there would, you couldn't smoke in the building. Now, and when I moved here, my dad came down here in 1978 in November, and he was here on the day of the national smokeout, which is, I think, November 2nd. I think they still do it. And he said, you know, my father, a lifelong non-smoker, said to me, I can't believe I'm in North Carolina on the day of the national smokeout, you know, one of the events that this state surely ignores. And he was right. It occurs to me that just in the time, the 40 years that I've been here, that Duke and Durham, North Carolina has completely transformed. You can't smoke within, I don't know, 50 feet, 100 feet. You can't smoke on a Duke campus, on the campus of these hospitals, absolutely, well, yeah. Anywhere, yeah. Anywhere. And that, to me, is a stunning reversal, all for the better, obviously, for a hospital system and university system, for that matter, that was built with tobacco money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so it seems to me that if we use that as a model in our thinking, that we can get there. But we have to realize the heavy lifting that's involved.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, it is interesting. I grew up, up north, so it wasn't – people smoked up north. I'm not going to say that they didn't.
Sure.
But not as much, you know, when we would drive down to Florida to see the family. You know, you got to go see everybody down there. We would drive there. It was amazing to me how much smoke was around. And even like when I was when I lived in New York City, and, you know, you would go out into the bars, and like, people were still smoking in restaurants. Which was just, a lifelong non-smoker. It was like the most disgusting thing. You would come home after going out to dinner and literally have to take a shower because your hair would smell of smoke because you're so close to people. And, your clothes. I mean, it's phenomenal. I knew it took years, but we finally got everybody to be able to go to a restaurant or, you know, go into a doctor's office. They were still smoking in doctor's offices, like you were just saying. I mean, it's just phenomenal. So people can change, mindsets can change. And again, we get back to science, if you listen to science. But I know where you're going with this conversation. So, I mean, you know, let's you know, move into that, because that's really the important point.
Well, you know, we have a short time left, but I, you know, the for NASCAR to be recognizing that they have to be in front of this. And they will bring their fans along. They already are. I think that that's an amazing and a terrific step, and is really meaningful that they have made this change. But also, as we've discussed, I think that there is a huge surge of corporate advertising recognition of where companies want to place themselves and how they want to align themselves in this cultural shift. And it's not in favor of Donald Trump's point of view. It's going to leave him and his ilk. They're going to be left behind. I mean, they always were going to be, but now it's going to be much faster.
And much faster. And, you know, it's unfortunate, as you're talking about NASCAR, which we would not think this was going to happen with NASCAR, right? If you told me that they were going to ban the Confederate flag and they were going to start talking about race.
I never would have believed that.
Right. But why didn't the NFL do it? What was the problem with the NFL?
So well, they better hurry up.
They look really weak right now that NASCAR is able to control this, and they had like absolutely made the wrong decision. And that was only like 3.5 years ago. That's not that long ago that they were still making the bad decisions. And I think because of the corporate sponsors, if you go back there, they didn't know how the corporate sponsors were going to react to their decision making.
Right.
And guess what? Wake up.
Yeah. Well,
they know
now.
You know, So, I mean, that's a really good point, Gene. I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you. Because I have too much time on my hands, I watch these things and I'm old enough to look back and these two things came together in my mind. And you can't, my God, if you have the TV on much, and I know you don't, cause I know that you're a busy girl. The advertising is amazing. I mean, corporate, and you know, Black Lives Matters ads branding ads on TV. You know, this television network stands with the Black Lives Matter movement. You've never seen anything like that
before. And where were they 3.5 years ago when, you know, someone was trying to make a point and tell us all this was going on? Where were they?
Right.
Why didn't I they not support this man? I mean, you know, I don't know.
Well, and you know, and that's exactly the kind of thing that we have to be able to look at and say, well, you know, I told Barbara Fushi the other day that I remember that great line from Al McShirley where he said, "It's hard to love you, brother, when your foot is on my neck."
Yeah.
And the point is, the Black community has never been vengeful about trying to make progress. They're just like, "Get your foot off my neck. I'm not asking you to give me everything you own. If you would just get your foot off my neck, that would be great."
Right.
And you know, while that's the request, we need to hurry up and say, "You got it." You know, yes, I'm taking my foot off your neck.
Right.
In,
exactly.
In every way. So.
Yeah. NASCAR well, could do it.
Yeah, I'm telling you. And NASCAR, these are the guys for the job. I'm telling you, they really are. Yep. I like it.
Real deal.
Well, I thank you very much. Please give my love to your mom.
We need
to do a show very soon with Jackie Rich, the Queen of Carrboro. I love it.
Absolutely.
I love it. I can't wait.
All right. We'll
book it as soon as we're done. All right. Well, I thank you, Penny Rich, and everybody go out and have a great and safe weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.